Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes on the hillside, little boxes all the same. There's a pink one and a green one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same.
Welcome to another Little Boxes Project edition of College Crosscast. I'm Ryan McDonald. We got a special one here. He's my old high school lacrosse coach and a big figure in the lacrosse community here in Levittown. He's Mr. Glenn Kokeman, or as I'll refer to him throughout it, Coach Kokeman. He's the former head coach at Division and now is the head coach at Mineola. And he also happened to play for Notre Dame, class of 1991, after he played at Division. After playing at Notre Dame, he took on the head coaching job at his alma mater later on at Division, did a little brief stint at Molloy as an assistant before heading back to the high school coaching ranks, where he's now at Mineola, where he also teaches social studies. On this edition, we're going to have a good chat about the changes in the sport of lacrosse since his days of playing back in the 80s and 90s to what it's become today, how he got into coaching, the thrills of coaching, and what he's learned from it, and a bit of fun along the way. And if you're a Notre Dame fan that's, you know, sick of me always being skeptical of Notre Dame's chances because they never looked that impressive, consider this your reprieve and, for once, a pro-Notre Dame crosscast. So, especially Team ND ATL, this podcast is especially for you. So, without further ado, here's a chat with Coach Kokeman, a Division legend and a Notre Dame laxer as well. And welcome, Coach Kokeman, to the College Crosscast Little Boxes Project. You're our second guest, and glad to have you on board.
Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate it.
You were a big fan of our first one, so figured everyone else has been a bit busy, might as well cheat a little bit and have my old high school coach on next. But glad to have you up on board for this one.
I enjoyed listening to you and Knuckle reminisce. It was great.
Well, we're going to do a little bit more reminiscing tonight. Just for our listeners to know, we have had trials and tribulations the past half hour of hooking this up because technology is amazing when it comes to setting up stuff like this. But first off, we like with any guest, we like to always do the this is your life portion of it. So a little bit about yourself and how did you get into the sport of lacrosse growing up? So a little bit of where you came from and how you fell in love with the sport.
Okay. You know, like you, Ryan, I grew up in Levittown, New York. And during that time there, as a youth, you know, the two things I played really were basketball and baseball, like most people in Levittown, you know, in the 80s. And, you know, a lot of people were playing baseball. So growing up, I played baseball. But then as I was went to Division as an eighth grader, I ended up switching and becoming a lacrosse player in ninth grade. My uncle Ed Hughes, was a great lacrosse player. He played at Adelphi, you know, All-American at Adelphi. I was on a bunch of the world teams and all that. He's actually on the world team in 84 when they did, like, the trial for the they played in Los Angeles at the Olympics. They did, you know, lacrosse that 84 Olympics. So he's the one that I always give credit for getting me into lacrosse. You know, as an eighth grader, he gave me a stick, and then I would go throw on the wall and do stuff like that. And then by the time I got into ninth grade at Division, I tried out for the freshman team. Back then, they were freshman teams. And I, you know, had a good year as a freshman. Then on 10th grade, played JV. We had a very good team. And then played the last 2 years as a varsity player. And then I went and played it in college a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So going into your Division days back in the day in high school and everything, what were some of your favorite memories back in high school playing at the high school level? And did you have any particular favorite games or friends on the team back when you were a Blue Dragon player?
Yes, the decades before you, in the late 80s, mid to late 80s, I was a Blue Dragon player. And back then, we were always good. In the 70s and the 80s, Division was always good. When I was an eighth grader at Division, they won the county finals. Their only county championship was in 1982, and I was in eighth grade for that. you know, I think as far as guys that I love to play with, I mean, I love playing with everyone. I still keep in touch with a lot of the guys that I went to high school with. One of them you know fairly well, Coach DiLorenzo.
Mm-hmm.
I had lunch with Coach DiLorenzo the other day. He's up from Florida State. He came up to Long Island, and we got together the other day. But I loved playing with him. I played football, basketball, and lacrosse with him. But playing lacrosse, you know, there are times when you're involved in something and you know that you are witnessing greatness. He was a great, great goalie. You know, he was the number one recruit coming out of high school. And just the things that he would do in practice, the things that he would do in games, you know, I still talk about it today with, like, my players. He was just a tremendous, tremendous player. And, you know, you're lucky. I feel very lucky to have spent time, you know, playing sports with him and the friendship we have today.
Mm-hmm.
As far as games, the game I'm going to give you is a terrible memory, Ryan.
Oh, no, so it's like me with the Euler game senior year, right?
Yeah, we'll get to that later. That Euler game bothers me to this day. But when I was a junior in 86, we went to Garden City. This was the year that they were undefeated. They won every game. They won their first state championship that year. And back then in 86, there was no A, B, C, D. Everybody was in one big pool. And we played Garden City twice a year. And we went over to Garden City in this huge game, you know, people everywhere. And Jerry had a great game, made a bunch of saves, and we lost 6-5. And I hit a pipe, and I still to this day remember dodging to my left and hitting the pipe, and we lost 6-5 to the team that went on to win the whole thing and not lose a game the whole year. So that's the one that sticks out to me. Out of all the games I played in high school, football, lacrosse, basketball, that's the one that sticks in my head to this day, you know, 30 years later.
Mm. So, high school lacrosse was a bit different back in the day, and so was college recruiting. Obviously, it's absolute apples and oranges comparing the 80s to the 2010s in terms of recruiting and everything. So, how was that process of being a prospect back then? How was it like back then for our younger listeners that don't know what it's a simpler time, if you will?
It really was a lot different because back then, if you were from Long Island and you went to a school like our school that had a pretty good reputation, you know, people wanted you like unseen. You know, it was like one of those things. You know, coaches would come to division just to ask Coach Amon, you know, do you have anybody? So I didn't pick up a lacrosse stick till ninth grade. You know, and I was still able to play in college based on the fact that Long Island was such a stronghold. And, you know, I was still looking at schools as a senior. You know, now the guys that play for me, you know, they commit as 10th graders, 11th graders. You know, I didn't decide where I was going until April of my senior year. In fact, Yale was one of the top schools in the country that year. Yale was number two in the country, I think. And senior year of high school, probably like December, my coach said, you know, what do you think about Yale? You know, because the Yale coach happened to be from Levittown also. And he was looking for someone that from division that he could, bring to Yale. So I really was even thinking about going to Yale as late as like January or February of my senior year. And then I finally, I kind of had my heart set on Notre Dame all along as, a, you know, from when I was a kid. But that didn't happen really, you know, wasn't finalized until April of senior year, I believe, if my memory serves me correctly. But it's completely different. Like you said, it's very tough to compare because it's not the same at all anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, choosing a school in April, that's like if you weren't even playing a sport, basically, making that decision back then.
It was really very, very similar to if you're someone that's not playing a sport and you get all your acceptance letters and you kind of decide where you want to go, and you got to get that first deposit payment in. That's what it was, whether you were an athlete or you were a non-athlete. The one thing I know about, you know, as far as getting into some of these schools I got into, I know that I wouldn't have gotten into these schools had I not been playing lacrosse. You know, my applications all had men's lacrosse stamped across the top when I sent them in. So I know that was very helpful. I got to Notre Dame, and I realized that my SAT scores were pretty good, but they weren't the same as a lot of the other people I was in class with. So I attribute that to having lacrosse stamped on the top of my application.
Mm-hmm. So choosing Notre Dame, you said, you know, one of your favorites as a kid and living out your dream and everything. So I guess a pretty easy decision when all was told for you, or was it a little bit difficult?
A little difficult because that was back in the day when, like, everybody from Division went to Nassau. So when we graduated, my graduating class was like 330 people, bigger than, you know, your classes later on in the 2000s. And none of my friends were going away. One of my friends was going to play Ohio Wesleyan. Jerry was the number one recruit in the country, and he was even going to go to Nassau for a year. And then he decided while he was at Nassau, he didn't play. You know, he wanted to keep those 4 years of eligibility, and then he went to Syracuse the following fall. But really, nobody was going anywhere. So I really, Villanova, Bucknell, Delaware, those were other places that were on my list. And I really, you know, up until the very end, decided that I should go to Notre Dame. It's where I really wanted to go. But those other places were closer, you know, and my friends were here. The girl I was dating at the time was here. You know, there was a lot going into it. And going, you know, 14 hours away to the Midwest, right? We're from Long Island, mm-hmm. the Midwest, you know, cornfields. It's crazy. I visited my senior year, and I'm like, what the hell is this? It snows 6 months a year because it's right on Lake Michigan, and there's cornfields everywhere. So as much as I wanted to go there, and I had always thought that this was where I wanted to go, it's tough when you're out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't tell you when they're on NBC every week in football that they're actually not in the New York City metropolitan area.
Yes, yes, indeed. My father was a big time football player, and one of the things that he said was the biggest mistake of his life. He could have played football there, and he was being recruited by, you know, tons of places even without very good grades. And that was his thing that he always said. He really wished that they wanted him to come out and go to summer school before his freshman year to kind of get caught up on the credits that he needed. Mm-hmm. And he was so good that he thought, I don't need to do that. You know, I don't need to do that. I'll go play somewhere else. And he went down south and played at Memphis. But that was always like his big mistake. So I had known that as a kid. And, you know, we I grew up watching Notre Dame and everything, you know, rooting for Notre Dame my whole life. So it made sense when the time came to actually pull the trigger and go.
Mm-hmm. You were kind of in at the ground level at Notre Dame, kind of right when they were starting to make the move up to varsity, if I'm not mistaken.
They became a varsity team in 81, mm-hmm. and I got there in 87, mm-hmm. 87, 88, and that's Corrigan came in, Coach Corrigan, who's now, you know, the coach now for the last 30 years. When I was a sophomore, Coach Corrigan, that was his first year there. So I was there really at the beginning of, you know, Rich O'Leary was the head coach then, and he'd been the club coach. Then he was the varsity coach. But I was there when they were kind of turning it over and trying to make it, you know, what it is today. That was always, you know, when I was talking to them in high school, it was, we're going to have tons of scholarships. We're going to be, you know, big time. You know, it was all that was the talk at the time. So it started to happen. They had the, I don't know if you remember, but you weren't alive then, Ryan, but I'm sure you know the historian that you are.
Yes.
That there were 12 teams in the NCAA tournament back then, and the 12th seed was a Western team. So you had to, you know, the four Western teams then were Notre Dame, Ohio State, Michigan State, and Air Force. So if you could beat those three teams, you were going to be the 12th seed in the tournament. You know, and it went that way for quite a few years. And then I would say, like, in the, you know, probably in the mid-90s, Notre Dame started getting in, and they weren't seeded 12 anymore. They were seeded, you know, 6, 7, 8, that type of thing. So that was really the beginning of the shift, I would say. I was there for the beginning of the shift.
Mm-hmm. So obviously you must have loved playing college lacrosse and everything. So first off, as you were saying, the beginning of the Coach Corrigan era, and he's obviously still the head coach, still leading the Irish along. Yeah,
that is.
So how was it like playing for him at his early part of his tenure there?
It was tough. He had come from Virginia. His top assistant was Jerry Byrne, another Levittown guy. You know, Jerry Byrne went to UMass and played on a couple of world teams, I believe, himself. And they're there today. You know, those guys were there the first year. And we'd be in front of Jerry DiLorenzo's house on Orchid Lane, and Jerry Byrne would run by every day. And we would say, hey, that's Jerry Byrne, you know. he's an All-American. And then all of a sudden, I'm playing for Jerry Byrne, you know? And being a Levittown guy, you know that I was the guy that got picked for every drill where Jerry was going to, you know, take the ball away from you. I was the guy that got picked for all that. But Coach Corrigan really was kind of setting a tone. So it was tough. We would practice at, you know, 5:30 in the morning. We would do stuff. We'd run, you know, we'd condition. We'd get in the pool and condition. And then we'd have to go to class. And then we'd have practice, you know, after school. It was tough, you know. And that's the thing that I think a lot of guys don't realize. When you're playing a Division I sport, you know, it's a job. So it's tough. And I think a lot of guys don't realize that. And they're not ready for that when they get to the college level, how much time they have to put in, you know. And now, especially with football, you see it where they limit the amount of time that you could have. You know, that's changed over the years. Back then, there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, you can only meet so many times and this and that. It was you could basically do what you wanted. But he was tough. He was trying to establish himself as a Division I coach. He'd been an assistant at Virginia where he played. You know, he knew what top lacrosse was like, and he was trying to you know, make his mark there at Notre Dame. And obviously, he has after all this time.
Mm-hmm. So other memories in Notre Dame, I guess we'll rat them out one by one a bit. Favorite game as a Fighting Irishman? Or a game that sticks out in particular?
Sticks out in my head was a game we went up to Michigan State as a sophomore. We went up to Michigan State. We had beaten Air Force, and Michigan State had been the team that had gotten that number 12 seed the 2 years prior. And Notre Dame had not ever gotten it. And we went up to Michigan State, and we lost 7-6 at Michigan State. And it just completely sticks out in my head, you know, as one of those games where we had it, and it just got away. You know, we should have really won that game. It was Coach's first year there. He really wanted to get in the tournament, you know, that first year that he was there. And I remember the bus ride up. I remember the game. You know, I remember the bus ride back. You know, there's not a lot of games where I remember all that. You know, it's just a lot of it's just kind of jumbled at this point. But I remember a lot about that game, and it was just such disappointment. You know, it's like a 4-hour bus ride back from East Lansing back to South Bend, and I just remember, you know, for 4 hours just being so crushed and disappointed because we really had it in our grasp and it got away.
Man, we're just reliving depressing memories for you so far.
I'll tell you, Ryan, I played for a long time. I coached for a long time. I do not remember a lot of the victories. I remember mainly the ones that stuck in my head are the defeats. Mm. Hewlett, still in my head, Ryan.
I hear you. did you have a favorite road venue in particular?
Oh, easy, Ryan. Ohio State. The Horseshoe. I actually said this to my son the other day. He was doing something on his computer, and I heard the good, the bad, the ugly theme. You know the good, the bad, the ugly theme?
Mm-hmm.
We came out of the locker room, walking onto the Ohio State field, and they played in that enormous horseshoe. You know, there was like 400, 500 people there to watch the lacrosse game, but they played in the horseshoe, and it was unbelievable to walk into that stadium with all the history, and then the good, the bad, the ugly theme was playing. I'm like, this is unbelievable. I turned to my buddy Eamon. And I said, this is incredible. You know, this is unbelievable. So we got to play there twice, actually, that year because another Ohio team that we were supposed to play, maybe Denison, their field was covered in snow or something. So we actually had to go to Ohio State twice that year. It was great.
Mm. And Notre Dame, you had also, you told us this story a couple of times to us when we were playing for you. The Rudy story, because they were filming Rudy during your time at Notre Dame.
It was not during my time. It was 2 years after I had graduated.
Uh-huh.
But my locker, when they filmed Rudy, they used the lacrosse locker room as the locker room for Rudy and all those guys. You know, that was supposed to be like the football locker room. So when they were filming, they left all the tape with the names on the lockers while they were filming. So the locker that I had was then in 1993, I think it was, because it was about 2 years after I graduated. In 1993, my buddy Bo Periello resided in that locker, and they're shooting the scene, and, you know, they're talking to Rudy and this and that, and the entire time you can see the locker. You see Periello written right there on the locker. I'm like, that was my locker. It is famous now because it is in the movie Rudy.
Now, you guys didn't play any game. Did you guys play any games at Notre Dame Stadium during your 4 years there?
No, we played the stadium, you know, the football stadium is right there. And mm-hmm. across the street is the basketball arena. It's called the ACC. And there's the basketball arena, and it's attached to another dome where the hockey arena was. And when you walk out the back of that, that's where the locker rooms are and the offices and all that. And when you walk out the back, today our Arlotta Stadium is there. But then there was a soccer slash lacrosse stadium there, and that's where we played. So we played all of our home games there. So we did not play inside the football stadium. Mm-hmm.
But you did get to play basically what became Arlotta.
It is now. Right where it's where Arlotta stands today. They mm-hmm. turned it used to be Moose Krause Stadium because Moose Krause was an old football player or AD. I forget what he was, mm-hmm. and I think it was the AD. And it was called Moose Krause Stadium, and it was where the soccer teams played mm-hmm. and the lacrosse team played.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any favorite teammates in particular? I believe you already name-dropped SNY's Eamon McEnany there.
Eamon McEnany. I'm going to give Eamon a shout-out right now. If you go on to Eamon's Instagram today, you could see him working a heavy bag, and I was leaving some nasty comments on there about his work on the heavy bag today, as a matter of fact. And Eamon McEnany was my roommate in college. Eamon McEnany was one of my best friends in college. Eamon is a good friend today. He is doing very well for himself. He became kind of the voice of college lacrosse and was doing all those Final Fours and everything for ESPN. He's a great guy. We lived together in college. We actually lived together in Manhattan after college when he was working up at ESPN. And, I'm proud of him. He's come a long way. He was calling the games, the football games on the radio when we were in college, and he wasn't very good. You know, we would bust his chops about how terrible he was, and he just worked at it and worked at it, worked on it. He worked at ESPN as a producer. You know, we used to sit in our apartment in the city, and there were a couple of Emmys on top of the TV because he'd won Emmys for SportsCenter. So he's really come a long way. He's on SNY now. He's devoted, completely to SNY. He was doing a lot of MSG Varsity, ESPN, but now he's just SNY. You know, he's got a couple kids, and he doesn't want to be traveling around as much, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Any other favorite teammates?
A good friend of mine, too, Dave Barnard, defenseman from New Canaan, Connecticut. Great guy. Lived across the hall from me, when we were, before we had moved out and got a house. Dave's a great guy. We're still in touch today. Takes his boat across the Sound occasionally. We meet up in Huntington, have some lunch. Going to see him next week when I go to Block Island. Just really a great guy. I made a lot of good friends. There are so many good guys from those days. And it's hard. When you go to a college like Notre Dame, it's not everybody is around. You go there, you're there together for 4 years, and then everyone goes their separate ways all across the country. So it's different. It's different. But Dave was a local, local. He's a Connecticut guy, and Eamon was from New York City. So, we hit it off right away as freshmen. We've been friends ever since, the last 30 years.
Very cool. So after your time at Notre Dame, you turned first you spent time at CW Post, now LIU Post. Yeah, tongue twister there. But afterwards, you turned your career, in addition to teaching, to coaching in lacrosse. So what made you go into coaching after your playing days were all wrapped up?
It was like an accident. I was going to Post to get my teaching degree because I didn't do any teaching. I was a business slash American Studies major at Notre Dame. And I came back to Long Island after I graduated. And I was working for the New Jersey Nets for a little bit. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I went and lived out in Arizona. Two of my Division Avenue buddies were at the University of Arizona. I went out there for a couple months. I came back. I was working for the New Jersey Nets for a couple months. And I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And my friend Brian Devine, who owned the Division Avenue Deli, was the JV basketball coach. And he said, and I had come back to New York. And he said, I can't coach JV basketball this year. You should do it. And I was like, really? And I thought about it, and I said, yeah, what the hell? My mother at the time was Doug Robbins, or Jim Amon. Was it still Jim Amon then? I don't know. She was Jim Amon's secretary and then Doug Robbins' secretary. And I said, you know what? I'll coach JV basketball. What the hell? So I coached JV basketball. We were 17-0 my first year coaching JV basketball. And then Sean Smith was the varsity lacrosse coach. and said, how would you like to coach JV lacrosse with Coach Bruno? And I said, sure. And at that time, I started to sub a little bit, too, because I was in the building, you know. It was weird because I was only 4 years removed, so I knew, you know, it was a lot of my friends, younger brothers and sisters that were running around then. It was a little weird, but I was doing that for a year. And I said, you know what, I could do this teaching thing. You know, this my sister was a teacher, too, so... And we had a lot of teachers in our family, and it never occurred to me. I was going to go to Notre Dame and then go to law school. You know, that was my whole plan. But, things change. And I did that, and then I started going to post. And while I was going to post, I was still coaching basketball and lacrosse at division. I did that for 5 years while I got my master's. And then I got my first teaching job up in Glen Cove. And I went up there, and I coached basketball and lacrosse up there for a year. I was a leave replacement for a year. And then I got my permanent job in Mineola. And that was like the late 90s. And then I was still coaching basketball in Glen Cove. And Scott Graham had taken over as the head coach at division and asked me to be his assistant. And I had gotten a job at Mineola, and they wanted me to coach. And I said, well, I'm going to coach basketball at Glen Cove, and I'm going to coach across the division. And the AD said, well, you know, if you want to get a job here, a permanent job, you probably should coach something here. So I ended up coaching for 4 years at Mineola. I coached Mineola lacrosse for 4 years. It was dreadful. And right after I got tenure, Scott Graham came around again and said, you know, my assistant is leaving. How about coming over now? And that's when I made the move over. That was like probably like 2002, 2001. And I was Scott's varsity assistant for a couple of years. And then I became the head coach for 6 years after that. And my final year at division was 2010. And then I did the 1 year at Molloy College. And then since then, I've been the head coach at Mineola High School, where I've been teaching for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to go a little bit in depth on the different positions first, because we're biased here. We'll start off with your time at division and some of your favorite memories, favorite players, et cetera, in your 6 years heading back home as a Blue Dragon.
Yeah, it was, you know, I love coaching division. Like, I can't tell you, when I decided to leave division, it was just torture for me. And I talked to Sean about it, and I talked to Coach Amon about it, because Coach Amon was my coach at division. And I just was tortured. But I really wanted to give the college thing a shot and see what it was like. So I left division. We had a great year. You know, that was Knuckles' junior year, and Duggan and Triola and all those guys were seniors. And I left after that, and I don't regret leaving at all, because things have worked out fine. But it was just really a tough decision, because I had coached 5 years there as a JV coach. I had played there for 4 years. Then I went to Mineola for a couple years. Then I came back as Scott's assistant for 4 or 5 years. Then I was the head coach for 6 years. So I, you know, for like 20 plus years, division had I'd been, you know, involved in division lacrosse to some extent. So it was really, really tough to move on, but it was a great experience. You know, the friendships you make, the people that you meet, the players that you get to coach, you know, Levittown's and you know this because you're from there, and a lot of people know this, but it's just a different type of, you get a different type of person there. You know, you get a blue collar type of person there. And I realized that when I went up to Glen Cove to coach, how different, the Levittown athlete was, and you know, what you can convince a Levittown kid to do as opposed to some other places that I've been. It's just great coaching that type of person. You know, I've had a ton of great players. You know the history probably better than I do, but you know, I was lucky enough to coach Tommy Davis in his, throughout his high school career, and Jimmy Davis and Big Jimmy, you know, and just some really, really good players. Billy Fama was a really good player for us, you know, kind of unheralded. We had some really good defensemen. You know, we always are kind of thought of as like an offensive team, but we had some really good defensemen. You know, when I was growing up, we had great goalies every year. It just seemed like division had a great goalie for like 25 years plus, you know, and we still had goalies when I was coaching there. You know, it was such a great experience for me. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry that it ended, but you know, it was time to try something else.
Mm-hmm. Well, just really a little bit more on division memories real quick.
Are you going to mention the Hewlett game?
No, we'll go with the better side, with good feeling, happy games. Do you remember?
I'm telling you, I don't remember a lot of good ones.
Okay, I'll re-jog a couple. 2006 Levittown tournament, winning that.
Oh, I'll tell you what. All of those Levittown tournaments was the greatest thing in the world. We had MacArthur's number for years. Years. That year that Freddie Mays stole Bruno's outlet pass and came around and scored to tie the game, and then Duggan scored the game winner. That must have been 2010. That was unbelievable. We won that one. We shouldn't have won that one. Or maybe that was 2000. That was 2009.
Was that 2009? I remember.
That was 2009. Was that when you were a senior?
Yeah, that was when I was a senior. And we.
That was a great one. That one is one of my best memories, Ryan. Because they were beating us. They were better than us. And we stole it at the end, and we won. That was a great game. Mm-hmm. Another great one. Knuckle mentioned it when we went to Hofstra, and we played Plain Edge in the quarterfinals. You guys were calling it the semifinals, but it was not the semifinals.
It was the quarters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we went to Plain Edge, and they had played us somewhat tough. You know, we'd beaten everybody but Garden City during the season, and Plain Edge had played us somewhat tough. And they really thought that they were going to beat us in the quarterfinals. And we just absolutely rolled them. And that was a great win. But I'll tell you, the best win of that 2010 was Wantagh. Going to Wantagh, they had beaten Garden City. They were like the number one team in the state in the B's. And we went to Wantagh. And we were just beating the hell out of them the entire game. And we were up like 16-10 when we decided to kind of take the foot off the gas, which was a mistake on my part, and we just tried to kill it a little bit. And then they gave the ball to Mangan and just let Mangan run through everybody. And then we ended up winning like 16-14, but we dominated that game. And that was one of the best feelings, because, you know, at that point we hadn't lost a game. They had beaten Garden City. Now we beat them, and that set up the matchup with us in Garden City in the last game of the year, which didn't go so well for us, but it was just, that was a great, great win. Mm-hmm. We had a win when Tommy Davis was a senior. I don't know what year that is. 2005. We went to Bethpage early in the year, and they had the twins. They had the Michelson twins, and they were very good that year. And we went over to Bethpage, and we scored late to tie it up, and then we won the faceoff in overtime, and I called timeout immediately. And Tommy Davis took the ball out of the timeout and just went by two or three guys and put it in the corner. We won 13-12. Great win. So I do remember some of the wins, Ryan.
Yes, yes, good. We're not going to harp on the bad ones. We're not harping on Lynbrook or Hewlett or Garden City or anything from the last 2 weeks of 08. None of that.
There you go.
None of that. Happy feelings. but yeah, this is an aside too on the division years. You also had the opportunity of being an assistant for the Long Island team during the Empire State Games. Back in the day, the Empire State Games were a all New York State Olympics for high school athletes, more or less. You had the privilege of being an assistant in 2004, I believe it was, right?
Great, great experience. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't trade it for anything. My wife was pregnant with our first child that whole summer. And, you know, so that was rough because I was gone a lot. We did a ton. We went to Hopkins. We went to Baltimore. We practiced at Hopkins. We went to Navy. We stayed at Navy for a week. We played the Navy team. You know, we went up to UMass for a week. We went to Connecticut a couple times. It was like an all summer thing. It was not just, you know, you pick the team and then you go play in August. We played all through June and all through July. And then the games finally came in August. And you had spent the entire summer with these guys. And we're talking about, this was, you know, Tommy Davis was on that team. Max Siebold was on that team. Gavin Petracca from Manhasset was on that team. Chris Pizer from Manhasset was on that team. I mean, it was tremendous. Bobby McCauley from Hicksville. I mean, those guys, that's, Pizer went to Princeton, McCauley went to Carolina, Petracca went to Carolina, Tommy went to, you know, Princeton, Max went to Cornell, became like the best player in the world, you know. So it really was, it was an amazing experience. I wouldn't trade it for anything. It was tough. Like I said, my wife was pregnant that whole summer, and I was just, you know, it was like a whirlwind. But I actually saw Max like 2 years ago at a Lizards game. He was signing autographs. So I grabbed my son, my oldest. I pull him up to the railing because he wants Max's autograph. And Max has got his head down and he's signing away, signing away, signing away. He's like within earshot of us now. He's still not looking up. He's just signing. And I go, "Hey, Max, I got someone you need to meet." And he doesn't even look up. He goes, "Oh, I recognize that voice." Then he gets over to us. I go, "I want you to meet this guy right here." I said, "This is the guy my wife was pregnant with all those years ago." And he goes, "Oh, you're making me feel old now." But, you know, my son was like 10 at the time. And that was who she was carrying around when I was schlepping all over the East Coast for the Empire team. Great experience. Tremendous experience. It's unfortunate they don't do it anymore. That, you know, during the recession, during the Great Recession, they were looking to ways cut funds, and they got rid of the Empire games. But that, for, you know, growing up, you know, you just wanted to make the Empire team. That was the thing that everyone that played lacrosse on Long Island wanted to make the Empire team. Because, like Coach Corrigan said, when he came to watch us in, where were we? Binghamton. And we were talking because Scott Rogers was my goalie from MacArthur, was one of my goalies. And Scott Rogers really wanted to go to Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. But Coach Corrigan didn't need a goalie. He had Joey Kemp, who just came off his freshman year as an All-American. And I was talking to Coach Corrigan, and he said, "You got 20 of the best players in the country right here. You're coaching." He goes, "Enjoy every second of this, because this is, you know, you don't get to do this very often." And he was right. And it was a great, great experience. I loved every second of it. It was a lot of time. You know, it's an unpaid thing. You don't get paid to do that. You know, it's quite an honor to get selected for that. But it was great. Mm-hmm. You know, getting to know those guys, you know, all those guys, because we had the 20 that traveled, and then another 12 that didn't travel, you know, that were alternates. And a guy like Zach Schroeder, I talked to Zach Schroeder the other day. He's an assistant in Maryland now. And I sent him an email to congratulate him for winning the national championship. And, you know, he's a guy that I coached the Empire team. I never would have known Zach Schroeder except I spent the summer with him coaching him on the Empire team. So it really was just a tremendous experience.
Mm-hmm. All right, so moving on. You touched upon this a little bit before, but you gave the college route a try with a year at Molloy as an assistant, as well as with Coach DiLorenzo, if I'm not mistaken, was also part of that coaching crew. So your 1 year at Molloy, even though it was short, how was your time there, of, you know, giving the college game a little bit of a try?
It was something that I really wanted to try. I got 7 years left. I'm retiring in 7 years, and I am going to be I'm going to coach college. You know, when I retire from teaching in 7 years, I'm going to coach college. That is my plan. But I wanted to give it a try. I knew Molloy was looking. Coach D'Lo told me that he was going to go back to college after we were done with that year at division, and he went, you know, to Molloy, and he kept calling me and saying, you know, they're looking for an offensive guy, and they want to know if you're interested. I'm like, nah, you know, I'm not interested. I'm happy where I am. You know, I got Knuckle coming back, and we're you know, we'd be pretty good next year. And I like doing my thing. And then, you know, the more I talked to him, and I always had that itch of, you know, I wonder if I could do it. You know, I wonder if I could coach college. And I spoke to George Powers, you know, legendary George Powers. And I asked him what he thought. And he said, you know, you coach them just like you coach high school. It's the same thing. And he was right. I went and did it for a year. It was really difficult. It was a difficult thing with the teaching schedule. You know, we would practice at 6 in the morning in Freeport. And then I would run from Freeport to Mineola to teach my classes there. And then I would run out the door and go to Rockville Center to, you know, practice there. And then the travel, you know, it was a lot of travel involved. It was hard to do when you're on a teaching schedule. So it was great. Got to know a lot of good kids. We had a lot of division kids that were there.
Yeah, I was going to say, what? There was about, what, 5 division kids on that year's team, I think.
A. Young was there.
There was A.
Stringer was there.
Stringer, Vogt, John Boyd.
Kevin Vogt was there.
DiLorenzo called him. Brian Farley.
Farley was there.
Jimmy Davis's grad year, I think.
Jimmy Davis came back. I got Jimmy Davis to come do a grad year. So it was like division all over again. Yeah. So I loved it. It was great. It just was... You know, the head coach was Eric Petrillo. He's a great guy. You know, Jerry and I had our own ideas about things. So we didn't, you know, philosophically, we had some, you know, we didn't necessarily agree on everything. But he was really a good guy, and he tried to let us do our thing as much as he could. But at the end of the, you know, and I understand, at the end of the day, he's the head coach, mm-hmm. you know? And that was also tough for me being a head coach for so long, and then all of a sudden I am not, you know, making the final decision on things. So that was tough too. But it wasn't, that wasn't any of the reason that I left. He asked me to come back, you know, for another year. And we had a long talk at the end of the season. And really, it was just the scheduling was just too tough. I was in a position where I was at the middle school in Mineola, and I had built up a lot of capital. So when I had to leave on a Thursday to fly to Pittsburgh, you know, it worked out, you know. But now what was happening in Mineola was they were shifting the eighth grade to the high school. So I was going to go into a new school where I didn't have any of this, you know, any of these favors I could call in. And I just knew it wouldn't work out again. So I declined going back to Molloy. I actually didn't coach at all in 2012. Mineola had asked me if I wanted to coach their team. But I just wanted to take a, you know, just wanted to not coach 1 year. You know, I'd been coaching for like 25 years at that point. So I actually coached my son's PAL, second grade PAL team. And then the following year, when the Mineola job was open again, I said, sure, I'll take it, you know. And it was a lot of the kids that I coached, because I was coaching football at Mineola at the time. So it was a lot of my football players were also my lacrosse players. So it worked out well, you know, it all worked out in the end. But I would have done the same thing again, you know, knowing how it turned out, I would have definitely made the same decision. I enjoyed the college game. I enjoy the fact that, you know, everybody could catch and throw, you know, that it's a different caliber. I enjoyed the, you know, the strategy involved and all that. And the, you know, the friendships with the kids, you know, because it's different. They're adults, you know, you're not dealing with 9th, 10th graders. You're dealing with, you know, 20-year-old men. So I liked all that about it. And I look forward to when I'm you know, going to retire in a couple of years, that I'm going to try and get back into college.
Mm-hmm. So currently you're at Mineola as the head coach there. So the Mustangs have taken a bit of a rise in recent years too, with you at the helm. So how's it like now being the head coach where you teach, and you know, the environment that you have going on there now?
I never realized it, because I had always coached at places where I didn't teach. The convenience of, you teach in the building, you know all the kids, you see them every day, you know, I need to tell everyone something, it's done in 2 seconds, you know, just that is great. That, you know, that aspect of it's fantastic. Mineola really was, when I was in high school, they were good. You know, Coach Lowe's kids, Darren Lowe and, what's the other one's name? Oh, Kevin. They were tremendous. One went to Brown, one went to Princeton. They were world team players. They were great. They were Mineola. They played at Mineola. So in the late 80s, early 90s, Mineola was really good, you know, and then they just hit this slump, you know, like a 20-year slump where they never got a sniff of the playoffs. They were 3-12 every year, and they just weren't very good. And I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, I just got there at the right time. You know, I had a team that was very similar. I compared them to the Duggan, Triola, Freddie Mace group, you know, how they were 10th graders, and I brought them all up to varsity. I did the same thing in Mineola when I got there. I had these kids that I knew very well. I knew they were lacrosse rats. They would do whatever I wanted, you know, and they would work at it. And as 10th graders, my first year there, when they were in 10th grade, we made the playoffs, which was like, you know, a miracle. And then we won a playoff game, you know, and that hadn't happened in Mineola in 20 plus years. And then the following year, you know, so that year we got to the Class C semifinals. And then the following year we got to the semifinals again. We lost to Cold Spring Harbor. And then my third year, when these guys were seniors, we got to the county final, you know, and that was 3 years ago. And that was Cold Spring Harbor's first state championship. You know, they've won 3 in a row. I don't think anyone's done that. I can't remember any team from Long Island winning 3 state championships. But we just kind of ran into this juggernaut. But those kids, in their senior year, they got to the county finals in football, and we lost to Roosevelt, who we had beaten earlier in the year. And then we got to the county finals in lacrosse. I mean, they just worked. And I knew that they were good athletes, and I knew that they would do everything I asked. And we got to the county finals in 2015, and Mineola hadn't been to the county finals since like 1961. So the town was, you know, a buzz. You know, the school was a buzz. It was great. It was great. And the last few years, like, my whole thing with coaching is it's all 3-year plans. And this is my, you know, this is the third year coming up of the second 3-year plan. And we've kind of been retooling a little bit. We made the playoffs the last 2 years. We lost a heartbreaker to Friends in the first round this year. But I think my team's going to be pretty good, you know, this year coming up. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the same thing. I built it with 10th graders that are going to be seniors this year. One of them just committed to Stony Brook the other day, John McMahon. And I've got a very good goalie who's going to go play at Mercy. So I just feel like I've been fortunate. And I think that, you know, the stuff that we used to do at Division, play together in the summer, play together in the winter, you know, all the things that we did at Division that they didn't do at Mineola, I think that that really has helped as well, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to get a little bit more personal here, but obviously your family is a very big part of your life. You have, what, 3 kids now, I think?
4. Got
4. 4. Ooh, yeah, I know. I know you were having the third one on the way when I was there.
Yes.
So, you know, with your wife and kids and everything, how much has family life helped you approach coaching lacrosse a bit?
I'll tell you what. Once I started having kids, and I'm 48 now, so my oldest guy is 12. So it wasn't like I had kids in my 20s. I had kids in my 30s. And I definitely was a yeller. You know, when I first started doing this, I was a yeller and I was super intense. And I know now that once I had kids, I now make sure that I treat everybody. And I hope you think this considering that you played for me, Ryan. Mm-hmm. But I try to treat everybody, you know, like how I would want my kids to be treated by their coach, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that there was a shift along the way. It was around the time, you know, that I started having kids, but I know that I'm definitely a lot more laid back than I used to be. And I don't just attribute that to age. I attribute that to, you know, to having all these kids. And I know that I would want, you know, my kids all play sports and they're coached by other people. They're not coached by me. And I just try and think about that when, you know, when I'm getting angry at Tommy Knuckle for throwing the ball away and I want to lay into him and tear him a new one. You know, I know that I would not want someone to just embarrass my kid and start screaming at him, you know. So I've always taken it where I want to treat everybody that plays for me, whether you're the, you know, you're the star player or you're a guy that doesn't get in. I want to treat everybody like I would want my kids to be treated if they were playing. So I think that, you know, I definitely think it's had a big impact on mm-hmm. on how my philosophy.
Mm-hmm. All right. Are you ready for some of the fun questions?
Go ahead, hit me.
All righty, so the personality stuff. Let's start off with a couple fun facts about yourself before we get into the pop culture stuff. Any, like, favorite hobbies or anything?
I'll tell you, Ryan, I don't have a ton of hobbies because I have 4 kids, and they're all young, and I coach, and I teach. So I don't have a ton of hobbies. I mean, I read a ton. You know, I pile books up on my nights. I don't read anything during the school year because I'm always reading for whatever subject I'm teaching. And I pile these books up. And then the first day that summer hits, I just start plowing through books. I mean, I think I'm through like 12 or 13 books so far, you know, in the last 6 weeks. And I just read any chance I get. So I guess you would consider that a hobby, mm-hmm. you know. But other than loving to go on vacation and, you know, getting away, and reading, you know, we love going to the beach, you know, stuff like that. But I don't think I have a ton of hobbies. I don't think I was ever really a hobby guy. I don't, you know.
Any fun facts about yourself?
Like what?
I don't know. Favorite color, I guess.
Blue. I'm a blue dragon, Ryan. That's a silly question.
What was your number as a lacrosse player, and why did
31.
You choose
it? 31 because this goes back to Division. I was 30 initially. My uncle Ed, the guy that was an All-American on all the world teams, he was 30. So I was 30 initially. Then when I was at Division, there was a guy 2 years older than me who I idolized. He played the same positions as me in lacrosse and football. You know, I always looked up to him. A guy named Chris Cassidy. The Cassidy's a Levittown legends also.
Oh yes, my dad and my family actually knows him too. They grew up right by me. Yep.
There you go. So Chris Cassidy was 2 years older than me. I really looked up to him. So he was 31, so that's why I became 31. And then when I got to college, there was a guy a year older than me who was 31 and would not give it up. So then I became 4 in college because I was 3 + 1 = 4.
Like that thinking. All right, so we're going to get into the favorites. You just mentioned that you've been plowing through some books. What are your all-time favorite books?
I just like authors, you know. I read like, you know, crime novels, you know, things like that, you know, mysteries. So like David Baldacci, I read every one of his books. Tom Clancy, back in the day when he was still alive, I read all of his books. I read a guy named John Sanford. Right now I'm reading Brad Thor. You know, he's got this one character that I enjoy. He's like a Secret Service CIA type of guy, you know. So I just find authors that I like, and then I just read everything that they wrote. So I ended up on Brad Thor because one of my other buddies from an old high school buddy who just reads unbelievable amounts of books, I was like, I have nothing to read. You know, I had read all of my favorite authors. I had read their most recent books the first couple weeks of the summer, and I had nothing to read. And he said, try Brad Thor. You know, you like Vince Flynn books, you'll like Brad Thor. So I started reading the Brad Thor books, and I'm like 7 deep. I got about 8 left to go before the end of the summer, and I'll be done with Brad Thor. So I'm more of an author guy.
Author guy. Are you a Vonnegut guy like Gilbert and I?
I have read all the Vonnegut, too.
Yeah, Gilbert and I were in the same AP lit class.
What'd you read? Slaughterhouse-Five?
Yeah, Slaughterhouse-Five and Breakfast of Champions. We did it for our senior year term paper.
Great books.
Yes.
Classics.
Favorite TV shows? Are you much of a TV guy?
Yeah, you know what? I got Narcos season 3 is coming up in September. Good friend of mine from college, Katie O'Connell, was a creator and executive producer of Narcos. So I've been waiting for that. That's coming out September 1st. I just watched Ozark on Netflix. Did you watch Ozark, Ryan?
No, I have not.
I recommend it highly. 10 episodes. Bang it out. 10 hours. It's fantastic. I watch Game of Thrones. You know, I don't ever miss an episode of Game of Thrones. What else have I watched? The Get Down, the history of rap. Ryan, The Get Down on the Netflix is fantastic. You should watch it. Unfortunately, they're not bringing it back for a third season, but the first two are tremendous. Right. Mm-hmm.
Make sure your son watches Gravity Falls. that's a great show, by the way.
That is a good one.
Even though it's a kid's show, it's really good. Glad I have someone else to back me up on that. favorite movies?
Favorite movies? I just saw Dunkirk the other day. It was tremendous. I'm a history guy. I teach social studies, so I was dying for Dunkirk to come out. It was very good. Christopher Nolan's best work, I would say, by far. Like, going back, favorite movies?
Yeah, if you want to.
I love, like, you know, like Zero Dark Thirty, I think, is a great movie. I actually rewatched that recently just because Catherine Bigelow's new one's coming out, Detroit, which I'm dying to see. But I rewatched Zero Dark Thirty the other day. I think that's a great movie. A movie like Good Will Hunting's a great movie. A movie like, what's the one with Tom Cruise as a lawyer?
It's
an Aaron Sorkin, A Few Good Men.
A Few Good Men, yes. They're doing a live production of that on NBC.
Broadway. Yes. I mean, that's a movie that no matter where I end up, I'll watch. If I turn it on and it's on, I watch the whole thing. You know, it's one of those. I like Sorkin. Like I like The West Wing. I watched all the West Wings way back when. You know, I like those dialogue-y shows, you know, where they're just always walking and talking. And A Few Good Men is truly an Aaron Sorkin because it's all about the dialogue.
All right, and now for the part you've definitely been looking forward to, we have the Spotify playlist for music.
Oh, I'll give you some good ones. You ready?
Yep.
What do you want, like current or all-time faves? What do you want?
You can do like a couple current, a couple all-time faves.
Listen, my currents are not mine. My currents are the crap I have to listen to in the car with 4 kids. So I like listen. I'm stuck listening to like Chainsmokers and Selena Gomez. So that's no good. The all times. I'll give you some Beasties, Ryan. My 2 favorite Beasties. So What You Want and The Sounds of Science. 2 of the greatest Beastie Boy songs of all time. Jay-Z, Eminem, Renegade, Ryan. Are we putting this on a playlist? Are you going to put this on somewhere?
Yep, it's going to be on the playlist along with Knuckles. So
absolutely, here we go.
So it was Jay-Z and Eminem's...
Renegade. It's a Jay-Z. It's on...
It was on that album that they did when they toured together, right? When they did that stadium tour.
No, that was Kanye and Jay-Z you're thinking of.
No. Kanye
and Jay-Z did a stadium thing together.
Well, no, didn't Eminem and Jay-Z do one in Detroit and one at Yankee Stadium or something like that?
Oh, you know what? Yeah, I think you're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Renegade. I'll give you some non-rap. Oh, no. What about Rick Ross? The Devil is a Lie. Rick Ross and Jay-Z. Get that on there.
Yes. And Jay-Z, The Devil is a Lie.
I'll give you a non-rap. Replacements. Unsatisfied. One of the greatest songs ever. From my youth.
Trust me, I love 80s music, so...
80s, 90s alternative, it's what I'm all about.
Yep, my dad has nice rotation going on the Sirius XM in his car, 70s on 7, 80s on 8, first wave.
I go first wave, channel 33, Lithium, channel 32.
Yeah, Lithium's very good, too.
Pearl Jam channel 22. That's my three station rotation on Sirius right now.
My rotation's usually 70s on 7, 80s on 8, 90s on 9, New Wave, Lithium, and Old Nation.
Put Pearl Jam Black on my list too. That's my last one.
All right.
Oh no, not black. Porch.
Porch by Pearl Jam.
There you go. That's a great list. That blows Knuckles' list away.
Knuckle, to his credit, had a decent one. He had quite a bit of an indie playlist I was not expecting, so it's all gonna go downhill probably once we get to like Migrate or something, because there'll be some sort of country mishmash or something.
I'm gonna tell you right now, there's no country ever on my radio, ever.
I can tolerate some country, but I generally would much rather just have a nice indie playlist going, indie and a little bit of rap mixed in here and there, but so any final thoughts before we wrap up?
No, I appreciate you having me on. I think it's great what you're doing. You know, I didn't know exactly what you were doing. I saw what you did with Knuckle. I listened to that and I went, you know, and then I started checking out some other stuff you did. It's great. It's great what you're doing. What I always appreciated about you was your passion for the sport. And, you know, I'll draw, you know, this will make you feel good. I'll draw a little parallel between you and Eamon McEnany. Mm-hmm. He was just passionate about what he wanted to do, you know, and it didn't pay well, and it was tough to get into the business, and look where it is now. Things have worked out great, and you were always super passionate about whatever it is that you were interested in, and you were a guy that knew the history of the sport, and, you know, and look where you are now. So I think it's great what you're doing, and I appreciate, you know, you having me on.
Well, I definitely appreciate that, too. Obviously, you know, this is my first job. I do... I work for a wedding company doing video, running their video department. But you know, as far as side hustles go, this is always a great one to do. And as I said, you know, this podcast has been so much fun to do. And doing this Levittown centric version of just getting all the stories out has been, you know, just two episodes in, has been really fulfilling. And hopefully keep this going throughout the off season with some more stories to share. And I'm so grateful to have you on board as well. You know,
you got to get Coach D'Lo on your podcast.
Yes,
down to Florida State. He'll give you some good Florida State stories.
Yes, eventually I got to get Coach D'Lo in.
And your favorite, Coach Hall. Don't forget about
your
favorite.
Yes, got to get Coach Hall in. Oh man,
I saw Coach Hall recently. I coached the Nassau team in June. Those Nassau Suffolk things, and Coach Hall's nephew, Dougie Hall's son, was on my team. So I got to see Coach Hall.
Yes, he's a great personality too. No, I loved all the coaches I had at Division, and you especially as well. So
I appreciate that.
All the guys having on. So as always, you know, pleasure to have you all the time. Great to catch up with you as well. I know we haven't talked recently, but glad to have you on the podcast, and glad to have you on board and share your story. And thanks for joining along.
We'll catch up next time you're at Hofstra. I will make sure I go. Last time you texted me, I wasn't there. But I'll catch up with you there.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Ryan. Anytime, buddy.
Well, as always, glad to catch up with my old high school coach, Mr. Glenn Kokeman. Really one of the great guys in the sport, and a lot of stories to share, as you saw from there. So we'll be continuing pumping out the CrossCast content as time goes on. Chris should have another dispatch or two from Lake Placid coming up in the next coming days. Otherwise, Little Boxes Project's going to be a little bit more frequent in the next couple of weeks. We've just been a bit busy the past month, both me and some of the people that I wanted to have on board. But be on the lookout. We're going to have some more stories here from people around my hometown of Levittown, New York, doing podcasts. So thanks again to Coach Kokeman for hopping on board. If you want to follow us, @college_cross is College Cross's Twitter account. You could follow on board there. Follow us on Facebook as well. You could follow me @RyanMcD29. Additionally, you could subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and Google Play. We're pumping out a lot of content for the off season, so you don't want to miss out on a beat for those. Either iTunes or Google Play will have it. We'll also have it on Podomatic. We're going to be in the midst of making a little bit of an upgrade on Podomatic, too, to have more episodes up at once. Usually, for storage reasons, we have to erase a couple along the way. I have them archived if you ever want to listen to them or anything, but we're going to make it so it's a little bit more storage. So stay tuned on that, and we'll make an announcement when that's all finalized. But otherwise, thanks for listening to another great Little Boxes Project episode. Glad to have Coach Kokeman on. And as always, because it's hot out, it's a summer, stay hydrated.